with our current situation. One of the, I mean, it affects our lives in very, in many ways. And there's all parts of our lives that we just always, I guess, part of, kind of assume that this is what's going to happen or this is what's going to be. And then we find that there are these occasions that we had always imagined that we would be there. And there are some very happy occasions and very, unfortunately, very sad occasions that suddenly people realize that the world is not exactly the same. And there have been people who've missed parents' funerals, who were sitting Shiva all by themselves. And there are people who've had family simchas and they've been unable to attend. And those are two sides of a very similar coin. But again, things that we just imagine, the world works in a certain way. So anyway, there are friends of ours who are part of this shir. They've been part of listening or participating in shir I've been given for years. And that is Jerry and Michael Laxmeter. And Jerry is my good friend from Las Vegas. I've mentioned her many, many times. And Jerry's grandson got married in Jerusalem last night. And I guess that she always imagined that she'd be there for the wedding. Like, what are you talking about? I mean, God willing, everybody's healthy. You travel, you go for the wedding. And suddenly all these little silly things are not as simple as they once were. Getting on a plane is not as simple as it once were. Getting to the airport is not as simple as it once was. Enjoy your bidud, but I don't know if that's supposed to be amusing at all, but that's the reality now. You go and travel and get locked up for 2 weeks. I mean, many people think to get locked up for 2 weeks, they need to do something more honorable. So anyway, mazal tov on the wedding of Margalit Silver to Matan Goldman. Jerry, who is a very modest, that's all that she asked me to say, but her grandchildren, one after the other, one of them I taught this year, but her grandchildren, one after the other, are incredibly talented, especially this young man, Matan, and I wish them much, much happiness and success in building their new lives. And Bezrat Hashem, when the next celebration comes, you should be there and enjoying in the center of it and have this ability to celebrate with family, something which, as I said again, we just always just took for granted and never thought about. So Bezrat Hashem, all of us should have many reasons to celebrate and have much of our family to celebrate with. Okay, so now let us begin the shiur. I mean, I just thought it was a good idea to kill as much time as possible because I was going to talk about Eishet Yifat Toar, and I wanted as much distance as possible between the Kalanov, the Chasuda, and the Eishet Yifat Toar. I didn't want anybody to think that there was some kind of a thematic connection over here. I want to talk about Eishet Yifat Toar. What can I do? I mean, it's not like there aren't some 50 other mitzvot in the parsha that I could have thought about instead. And I wasn't going to talk about it. I was going to try to go by it, but I couldn't. So let's try this again, and we will begin. Now, it's really easy to offer apologetics. I've done that before. I mean, not knowingly. But if you try to explain Eishet Yifat Toar, then I think you'll end up with apologetics. You'll say that it's a strategy. And just because I call it apologetics doesn't mean I don't believe it. It could very well be a strategy to avoid it. But I want to try to do something today, which, again, the wiser choice would be to pick something else to talk about. But I can't. I want to try to understand Jewish philosophy, and maybe that term is not correct, then we'll call it machshava. Machshava maybe is not as, we're not as obligated when it's a machshava or machshava, but I want to understand what this is, because what is this commandment? So I'm going to start with source number one and ignore the first line. Ki tetzei l'milchama oleivecha, when you go to war against your enemy, unatno Hashem elokecha biyadcha v'shivita shivyo. You're going to go to war against your enemy. It's preferable to make peace with your enemies. But sometimes there's war. This is considered to be Mechemet Rishut, one which is not an obligation, one where there is either financial or other those types of reasons. And God causes you to be victorious, and you find in your midst a captive. V'ra'ita b'shivya eishet yifat toar. And you see among the captives a beautiful woman. V'chashakta ba. And you desire her. Now the word cheshek, the word desire, is already going to be a trigger or a hint that this is not a good thing. Generally, Judaism does not say that this is what you should be doing. It says you see a beautiful woman, you desire her, v'lekachta lecha lisha, and you take her as a wife. Now, the problem with this is that you took her, and I don't know if you've noticed this, but she does not seem to have a voice. She does not seem to have very much agency. You bring her to your home, and this is not because she just became Satmar, but you shave her hair, we're told, because this is going to be part of this mourning process. Which is understood, you allow her nails to grow long. You're going to take off this clothing, and she's going to sit in your home. And she will cry for her parents for a month, and then tavoy leha, you will have relations with her, and she'll be your wife. But if you didn't want her, you'll send her on her way, and certainly do not sell her, and there will be some discussion what the word titamer means, because you abused her. Now, I want to try to make sense of this section. The sense that we get when we read it is that, again, here is the victor and here is the conquest. The conquest is taken, and this is what we would call, under any other situation, a situation of rape. And I don't think I have to work that hard to try to argue that we're dealing with something which seems to be fundamentally immoral. Now, if you're going to tell me, but there are spoils of war, and to the victor all the spoils, it seems somewhat incongruous with what I would normally call Jewish ethics. Now, you could tell me that I'm wrong about all of this. You can say that I am a product of my time, which I certainly am, and I'm a product of my upbringing, which I certainly am. And there are certain things which I would consider to be decent, and certain things I would consider to be not decent. And therefore, the problem here is with me. And therefore, this is what the Torah says should be done. So I need to update my moral or value system in order to fit into this. And there are certain Jews, I'm sure, can take this approach. There are certain parts of the Torah which are their favorites. Later on, the end of this week's parasha, we have a situation of genocide. Go take out Amalek and kill all of them. I'm sure there are some Jews, this is their favorite mitzvah. Maybe that's a good idea to ask on a first date, what is your favorite mitzvah? If they say Mechiyas Amalek, so then it maybe gives you a little bit of insight. There was one younger woman that I knew that worked for me years ago. So she told me that she went on a shidduch date, and the fellow she went with was a yeshiva bacher, and he thought himself to be very clever. So he said to her that if you saw a little cute little kid, blonde hair, blue eyes, I guess it was the whole Aryan thing which is being presented, and he had a t-shirt on, it said, "Proud member of Amalek, would you kill him?" So this was a trick question. If she says she would, then he goes, "What kind of human being are you?" If she says she wouldn't, then what kind of Jew are you? So it was a trick question. She was very smart, and she said, "Listen, according to some Rishonim, there's no mitzvah of Mechiyas Amalek on women, it's only on men." The Sefer Chinuch brings this. So she said, "Therefore, it's a suffix derisive for me, but for you, it's a vaday, so I'd bring the kid over to you, and you can kill him." So that was her response, and she refused to go out with him again. But again, if somebody comes and says, "No, genocide is my favorite mitzvah," so there is going to be something, which again, I hope that you agree with me that there's something disturbing about this. But I don't want to make my argument based upon, okay, that I am wrong here because there are certain mitzvot I like and I don't like, and therefore my whole approach is based upon subjectivity. My whole approach is based upon my own, shall we say, value system, which is, again, subjective and is not denoting true Torah values. So let's just try to look at something over here. And what it is really context. Right before this, and the way it's presented the Torah, it's the same chapter. Not that the chapters are all that meaning for us. We end up last week with a discussion about this body which is found along the road, and the whole Egla Rufa, and it says, be very careful about the innocent blood that was spilled, because we need to do things which are yashar in the eyes of God. So I just find that really interesting. I'm going to make this point stronger as we go on. On the one hand, we need to do what's yashar b'nei Hashem, and we need to be concerned not only about human beings. I know that that seems to be a jump perhaps to some of you. Not only to human beings do we need concern, but we even need concern for a dead, anonymous, homeless body, this vagabond along the road, and so on and so forth. Even there needs to be some kind of a concern, and do, which is yashar b'nei Hashem. Oh, unless you just came back from battle and you're pulling a woman by her hair, and then you can go ahead and rape her. So I hope you all appreciate that there's something which is very jarring about this. If we continue, and again, I'm just picking randomly in this week's parsha. You can try to pick randomly and find opposite cases. I don't think you will. We have in source number 2, you're going to see a shore of your brother and it got lost, so make sure to return it to them. You need to have sensitivity to people's property. Somebody that's lost things, bring it back. You don't know what belongs to, so bring it into your house and then take care of it, which means make sure you give it back afterwards. And you can't ignore all of this. So what we have over here is a law of sensitivity towards another human being. Please return their lost objects. In Pasuk Dalet over there, if you see Chamor Achicho Sharon Noflim B'Derech V'Talam Temehem, help him lift things up. The animal fell down. We can continue. There are other laws in terms of animals. Tzar Balei Chaim. We have to make, loading, unloading donkeys and so on. So the Torah, now you're going to tell me, the Torah is concerned about the feelings of a donkey. But when it comes to this woman, you can go ahead and rape her. So that's what I'm saying again, that there's just something which is a disconnect over here that we need to try to make sense of. Not only that, and you can now argue that I'm about to tell you is not pshat in the Chumash, but is pshat in the Chumash. It may not be pshat in the Mishnah, but it's pshat in the Chumash. Ki yikarek kan tzipor, you come across a nest, and then you want to take the eggs, so it says chase away the mother. Right? Lo tikach ha'em abanim, shalayach tishalach ha'em, v'bin tikach lach. Go chase away the mother. So a bird whose brain is very minimal, you need to have compassion for the bird and chase it away when you take away the eggs. But I'll say it again, but when it comes to this woman in the battlefield, that's a whole different story. So we care about donkeys, we care about people's possessions, we care about the mother bird, but we don't care about this woman. And that's why I'm saying that there's just something which is wrong over here. But not only that, this week's parsha, ironically or not ironically, actually teaches about a situation of rape. That woman who, that man who attacked this woman, he will be put to death for this. Again, this is talking about a woman who's engaged in a Torah sense. Ulanara lota sedavar, ein lenara chet mavet, ki kaasher yukam ish arayehu, uratzacho nefesh kena devar zeh. So the Torah just made a moral equation, and the Torah just now insisted that a situation of rape is analogous to a situation of murder. So I hope that now, and it continues, ki besadema tzatzaka nara morasa ve'in moshiach, there was no one to save her. So what can you imply from that? That if there was someone to save her, then you should save her. And this is the whole idea of a good Samaritan, or you see somebody chasing after someone else to harm them, to rape them, to do damage to them, that a person's supposed to get involved. Again, the terminology is a good Samaritan. But again, I want you to appreciate what the Torah just now did. It equated a situation of rape with a situation of murder. And we ended last week's parasha by saying, and if there's a situation of murder, make sure that one does this proper ritual, because we can't just leave a case of murder by itself and right afterwards but go to battle and you can take this woman. So again, it's troubling. Now, just in case you're going to tell me, and maybe there will be some kind of support for this, I don't like it, but I just want to give you a little bit of a chance and say, well, maybe there's a difference over here, that we're racist. That when it comes to Jews, we have one behavior. When it comes to non-Jews, we have different behavior. So therefore, that all of this can really be seen as some kind of a racism. So it's interesting to get to my next source, and that is, I didn't put a number there, I apologize, it's a continuation here. It is in Perek Kaf Gimel, Pasuk Ted Zayin. What happens if an Evid runs away? Lo tasgir Evid el Adonav. So an Evid runs away. Rashi is going to tell us, who is this Evid? This is an Evid Kanani. An Evid Kanani runs away. It says, Lo tasgir Evid el Adonav. Don't return the Evid to their master. Lo tonenu. Again, this don't cause there to be abuse and so on. So this is really interesting that the Torah is telling us, have this compassion for this Evid. So we have compassion for the Evid, we have compassion for the mother bird, we have compassion for the potential rape victim, we have compassion for the donkey, we have compassion for the person who lost his objects, but this woman in the battle, then that's where we stop. So when I was trying to make this argument, I think it's a little bit stronger than we realized. It's not just that I happen to feel that there's a problem with this. It seems to be that it doesn't fit in properly with everything else that we're seeing over here. Now, there was a word that we had before, lotit amerba. So what exactly does lotit amerba mean? I want to cheat a little bit, and then we'll look at some more sources. But first, I'm going to show you how we're going to cheat. We're going to look at source number 10, which is the Living Torah by Aryeh Kaplan. If you can't sell her, she is not your possession. Because you've abused this woman. Now, what does tit amer mean? So now let's go back at the various opinions he tells us. Right, you can't keep her as a servant or enjoy her services. So he though tit amer ba, he understands keep her as a servant. Or another possibility is don't enjoy her services where she's going to work for you. Hit amer in Hebrew, see Devarim 24:7, which we're about to look at. Or others, the Ramban and Rav Saad, you say lord over her. You're not her boss. Or do business with her, right? Cause any kind of which would be somewhat repetitive perhaps. Deceive her, treat her contemptuously. Now, all of this is really interesting interpretations, but let's just go back because the same word is used a second time in this parsha. Ki matzei ish gonev nefesh me'achav mibnei Yisrael v'hit amer bo. This is talking about a case of kidnapping. Again, we have sensitivity. You can't just take somebody who's not yours. By the way, realize the irony over here. You're not allowed to kidnap somebody. But if you go to war and you see this woman, you can take her. So just realize that the evidence of the rest of this parsha seems to be directly against not just the morality, all of the details which we thought we had in terms of the Eshi Fator. You can't kidnap Saudi. V'hit amer ba'umacharo. You can't take them and cause them to work for you, we'll say, or to sell them, and so on. The person who kidnaps, this is punishable by death. Oh, but when it comes to Eshi Fator, so all that's okay. So rape isn't okay, but Eshi Fator, this is okay. Kidnapping's not okay, but over here it's okay. We should have sensitivity, except over here. So again, I'm just going to say that there's something which is terribly troubling. We need to have compassion. It continues in Pasuk Yud for somebody to return the avot. It continues. We have for poor people. We need to have compassion. Return if you took somebody's blanket as a collateral. Make sure you return it to them. Make sure you pay people their wages for their day's work, which they did. Don't let the day pass without paying them. It continues not to treat the people who are disenfranchised, the ger, the yatom, those who begged almana, and so on. It continues, and it talks about the ger, yatom, and almana. Leave things in the corner of your fields. Make sure that you take care of the poor and the disadvantages and disadvantage this. The disenfranchised, and so on and so forth. And all the laws over here are all to take care of. Why? Because you were once disenfranchised. You were once a slave. So my point over here is, in all of these examples, what I've been trying to say is that when I say that I have difficulty with Eshifat Torah, my reason for having difficulty with it is because it seems to absolutely go against the mores, not my 21st century mores because I was brought up in a particular place and time. It seems to fly in the face of the mores which are mentioned in this week's Parsha in multiple places. And I'm not even going to other Parshiot. I'm just sitting right here in Kitetse, and it's almost every single element over here about this seems not to work or not to compute, that there's just something which apparently we're not understanding. Because how could this really be that this is what the Torah is allowing? And therefore, I think that my question or my problem now is properly understood. Let me go back, and now we're going to look at Rashi, and we'll look a little bit what Chazal do with this. Rashi writes, L'kachta l'chalisha. So the first thing he says is, Lo dibra Torah ela k'neged yetzahara. So this is some kind of... the Torah is not talking to a moral person. Lo dibra Torah ela k'neged yetzahara. The Torah is not talking to a decent person. It's talking to a person who's consumed by their evil inclination. You can translate all of this differently, but that's how I choose to translate it. And then he tells us something really interesting, and we'll see the Gemara as well. She'im eina kadosh baruch hu matira. Because if God didn't allow it, yisa'ena bi'isur, he would marry her in a way that was not allowed. But Rashi here tells us from the Tanchuma, but just realize this is not going to work out well. That if you do marry her, and he has what we call smichut parshiot, the next parsha talks about a man having two wives, then it talks about having the rebellious son. If he does marry, he's going to end up hating her. And by the way, I wonder out loud, later on in the Torah it says that if a man married a woman and he hates her, and therefore you should divorce her. I wonder if this is talking about divorce as well. When a person has two wives, one he likes, one he doesn't like, I wonder if the one he doesn't like is the one that he's divorced, because the issue is who will inherit. So I just say that very quickly as an aside, but it's something I think is worth looking into. And afterwards they're going to have a rebellious child. So essentially what the Torah is telling us is that there is going to be, again, the way that Rashi understands it from the Midrash Tanchuma, there's going to be a very, very negative process which will take place. The father, husband, practices very poor impulse control, goes out to war, brings home a second wife, because he already has a wife at home. That's exactly what Rashi's pointing out. Says his wife looks at him and says, "Oh, back from war, right? Great to see you. Who's she?" "Oh, she's my new captive." And he has a child with his captive. So what exactly is this going to do the whole family structure? Which means that's part of what Rashi or the Midrash is telling us. Please consider outcomes of your behavior. By the way, that is the best strategy towards the Yetzer Hara. The Yetzer Hara, it dominates in terms of the present tense. And the way to defeat the Yetzer Hara is think about the future tense. Think about consequences of your actions. People who don't think about consequences of their actions, therefore, are free to do whatever they want. Why? Because they don't have to consider consequences. When we consider consequences of our actions, then we can perhaps be able to live out of the moment. In this moment, there is passion. In this moment, there's desire. In this moment, there's lust. All of those things are within the way that this was presented. So the Torah says, okay, we're going to allow this to happen. But again, let's go back and look exactly the way that Rashi had stated this. Again, the second part of Rashi was, consider consequences. Think about the future. Think about now having two wives, this captive woman and your other wife, and now you have children from both. How are you going to work all of this out? Now you've taken your life and have made it unnecessarily complicated. And what do you think the child is going to be born? What kind of anger do you think this child is going to have, knowing that his mother was dragged home by her hair and against her will? Do you think he's going to have a great deal of respect for his father and his father's value system? I mean, you don't have to be a Freudian to figure out some of the dysfunctionality which is going to follow from this. And that's essentially what Rashi is telling us. Think about the future. And I can say that's the strategy of Keneged Yetzer Hara, is to consider what the future is going to bring. But let's go back and take a look at Rashi, because actually the next Rashi says something interesting, which is probably far more important than I'm going to explain it right now. Visira etzimat shivya. Take off the clothing she was worn when she was captured. Why? Lefi shehim na'im. Because she was wearing beautiful clothing. Now, beautiful may not exactly mean beautiful, but it could be attractive here as well. And I'll explain. Shehagoyim binoteim mitkashtot b'milchama b'shvil lehaznot achareim imahem. Is that this was part of the battle. Now, part of what we don't recognize or we don't understand is battles used to take place in hand-to-hand combat. They were not, you know, shooting long-range missiles at one another. Hand-to-hand combat, and they would bring women who were attractive, who were dressed in a way that they would be a distraction. For those of you who like college football, this is called cheerleaders. They would bring them out to the battlefield in order to try to distract the other side and in order to take their mind off of the battle. And therefore, these women were part of the war machine. They're part of, which means you, not just part because they're getting something. No, they're there on the battlefield. So again, this comment of Rashi is fascinating. He's saying, get those clothing off them. What kind of clothing do you think it was? It was the mini dress and it was whatever else. Okay, you know what? I don't want to lead you anyplace. You can let your own imaginations take you where you should not go. Maybe we need to make a new chumash with pictures on the side. Okay, this would be censored. So this would just, we'll cross out the picture of the Eshet Yifator. She is a beautiful woman who is there because of her beauty. Okay, I'll stop already because I'm already losing most of you right now. But that's what Rashi said. And that is a really interesting comment. Again, just in case any of you are going to attack me for what I didn't say, because now you're going to say to me, oh, because she was dressed in a certain way, therefore she deserved it. And therefore you're blaming the victim. No, that's not what I said. I actually said I have moral difficulty with the rape. I have moral difficulty with the whole process, but I just want to say that she's not an innocent victim. She is part of the battle. And the reason that she's by the battlefield is to use her sexuality and her attraction in order to serve as some kind of a diversion in order for the other side to win. So therefore, all that I'm saying, not that she deserves what happens over here, but she is, Serena wrote, she was may not have been brought there willingly. Perhaps. I have sympathy to this. I'm just pointing out what Rashi is saying. Rashi is saying that she is on the battlefield because she is part of this entire process. So let's go back now and try to go a little bit further. Rashi was really citing from the Gemara. And I want you to see and to appreciate how the Gemara articulates this. Tanu Rabbanan, v'ri'ita b'shivya, b'shat shivya, right, when she's captured. Eshet, v'afilo eshet ish, even when she's married. Yifat Torah, lo dibri Torah ela k'neged yetzahara. The Torah over here is speaking against the yetzahara. Mutav sheyochlu Yisrael basar t'mutot shchutot. I want you to really understand what the Gemara just now said. The Gemara's analogy was, you have an old cow. Okay, let me pause for a second. The meat in Israel today is a lot better than it used to be. But the meat's very good. In the old days, you know what meat they used to serve? The old milk cow. They got old. The milk wasn't working anymore, so okay. When the cow was about to kick, so then we can shecht it, and the meat was not going to be all that good. That's what the Gemara said. You have an old cow which is about to die. Technically, you're allowed to shecht it still, because it's better to allow to shecht it properly then run the risk that someone's going to have a dead cow and say, okay, it's dead already, may as well just, you know, serve some anyway. Again, there is a thing which is called a trefa. A trefa most likely would be a definition that it has some kind of a condition, that because of the condition, it will die within the next 12 months. On the other hand, you can have something that doesn't have a condition, but nonetheless, it's not going to last very long. So what is it that the Gemara just now said? And again, I want to read the words again, because you can't ignore the words. It says, this situation of the Eshef HaTor is comparable to Mutav Shechlu Yisrael Besar T'mutot Shchutot. The animal is about to die, but technically what can you do? You didn't break any law over here, but there should be something disturbing about it. The cow was about to die, so quickly do a Shechita V'al Yechlu Besar T'mutot Nevelot. That's preferable to eating an avela, which means it just died by itself. So that's really interesting, because essentially what it's saying is that, you know, this is 99% wrong, but there's like this 1% right, and the 1% right is enough to justify it, because technically you did shechita. Essentially what this is saying is that this is something which is morally wrong, but technically okay. And again, that's the comparison, that the Eshef HaTor, everything about this is wrong, but technically the Torah allowed it, because why? Because if I didn't allow this something which is morally wrong, there was a risk over here that something far worse was going to take place. If I don't allow somebody to shech their cow, which is about to die, but it's technically not a trefa, then the person will end up letting the cow die and then cutting it up. Everyone, oh, here, you know, I'll sell you some of my meat, without realizing that the animal was actually a nevela in this particular case. So this is not what I would call a full and absolute moral support of the law of Eshef HaTor. It's saying that this is as morally, technically inappropriate as possible. And I'll say the word technically the other way around. It's inappropriate, but technically okay. That's really what you want to do? So that's what the Gemara is saying. That's the comparison of the Gemara. By the way, this Gemara, I've seen it quoted with vegetarian, nothing to do with being a vegetarian. It's nothing to do about shechting a healthy animal. I'm sorry for saying this. It's about shechting an animal which is about to die. That's what the consideration is over here. Rashi writes in the Gemara, in Source 8, Yifat Torah, Mash mitoch shemitgareba yitzro, machmat yofya, that she has caused, again, Rina, she has caused his lust to be inflamed because of her beauty. Shemitgareba yitzro, I think, machmat yofya, hitirilo uvakoshi. The Torah barely allowed it. Ela demutav sheichlu Yisrael basar temutot shchuta basar misukenet. It was an animal that was in a life and death situation, was about to die. Shchuta v'yafupisha himu'usa. Even though the Rashi adds the value judgment, there's something which is morally disgusting about this. Which means Rashi just now said, what did the Gemara tell us? This is morally disgusting, but the Torah barely allowed it, but it's like this technicality. But there's really something wrong. And he brings a pasuk in Yecheskel, which you can look at later if you so choose. So we need to understand this. I brought a bunch of sources over here, which I saved all of them by looking at the Aryeh Kaplan before, about what this word means, to sell or not to sell. But it's saying essentially that maybe I should make sure that we understand it properly. Rashi writes, Source 16. But yeah, imlo chavtzaba, you don't want her chavtzaba. Hakatuv mivasrecha shosof chalasonata. Say in the end, you're not going to want her. Lo tit amerba, lo tishtameshba. Beloshen parsi karin la avdut v'shimush imra'a. Mishadosho moshadar shlamaratikain. And there are other midrashim, as you see in Source 17, that say this as well. It says you can't. With like a whole list of things we saw before. You can't sell her. You can't have her working for you. You can't turn her into a slave. You can't treat her with contempt. So what can you do? So that's really what I wanted to get to. And if, again, I have all these sources which I saved you before, and you can look at it if you want, Source 19, 20, 21, 22, and so on and so forth. The Siftei Kohen of Mordechai HaKohen, he was among the Kabbalists in Sfat. He does some really fabulous analysis over here in terms of this whole section. And part of what I really like about what he does is his self-awareness. What I mean by that is he'll give us a whole moral description of what's taking place, and then he'll back up and say, okay, but now I'll tell you pshat. Which means that sometimes people try to convince themselves that what they're saying to you is pshat, right? You know, the old discussion, what's the difference between pshat and drash? So whatever I say is pshat, whatever the other person says is drash. So he has this awareness that he knows when he's saying drash and he knows when he's saying pshat, or at least what he believes is one, and both of them are beautiful, and both of them are valuable. And even though he was a Kabbalist from Tzfat, he doesn't do that much Kabbalah. Sometimes he does, but he doesn't do that over here. And let's take a look and see what he does. You go out to war against your enemy. That's the biggest battle, which is the battle against the Yetzirah. Alexander the Great came back from war. And he met Aristotle. And Aristotle says, you had the small victory. Now you got the big victory. There's a greater battle than what I fought. Look at this. Alexander the Great talking about the Yetzirah. Sorry, Aristotle. Now, this is very interesting. I do want to pause on this one for a second. I couldn't resist. I have a friend, Professor Gabriel Danzig, who is a professor of Greek thought. So I sent this to him. I said, "Nu, what do you think?" So I didn't get permission to read his response, but I will. And he writes, some of you can see it, it's on the screen, "That passage is wonderful. I've copied it from my file for Greek Jewish topics. I wonder where he found that story. I doubt he would have made it up. It takes a Greek theme full circle because I think the Mishnah is a reworking of a Greek idea. The idea that desires enslave us, that we need to fight them as if it were war, as is found in, I don't know how to pronounce that, Xenophon, I guess? Anybody shaking their head at me? Okay, could be. Critobulus, we must fight for our freedom against these tyrants as persistently as if they were armed men trying to enslave us. Indeed, open enemies may be gentlemen, and when they enslave us, may be chastening, purge us of our faults, and cause us to live better lives in future. But such mistresses as these never cease to plague men in body and soul and estate all the time that they have dominion over them. So again, he felt that this was actually a very Greek idea, and he felt that it was really quite appropriate that it was put in the mouth of Aristotle, and this idea of Ezu Gibor Kovishet Yitzro. But by the way, just think for a second about the implication of all this in terms of our discussion. You're going to go to war, and when you go to war, you have to fight against an enemy. And who's this enemy? The enemy wants to kill you. And then you're going to come back from war, and there's going to be this beautiful woman. Okay, now who's a real, you know, person who's strong? Ezu Gibor Kovishet Yitzro. So now's the perfect time to remember that Mishnah. You went to war, you were victorious, you think you're so strong, you think you're so tough, so now control the Yetzirah inside of you. So you realize that what he's saying over here, again, it's whether this is pshat or not pshat, it's pretty good. And again, I just want to continue with what he does with this now. V'shevita shevya, ze Yetzirah tov. Who's the one who's been captive? The Yetzer HaTov was captive. Because how in the world is the Yetzer Hara victorious and tempting you? Because your Yetzer Tov has been conquered. Shavui v'kafuf tachad yad Yetzer Hara. By the way, that's fascinating. You know, I said before that one of the ways of defeating the Yetzer Hara is to think about long-term consequences. You know another way of defeating the Yetzer Hara? Knowing that it's the Yetzer Hara that's giving you this advice. The problem is you think the thing which is giving you the advice to do that which you want to do is the Yetzer Tov. You've convinced yourself it's the Yetzer Tov, and now, of course, I'm going to do this. Like, what's the problem? This is one of the mitzvot of the Torah. It's one of the Tariq mitzvot. This is wonderful. But he's saying, no, realize that this is a battle against the Yetzer Hara, and where is your Yetzer Tov? Your Yetzer Tov, he just now identified with the Eshet Yifat Toar. Because your Yetzer Tov is beautiful. What's the problem? It's been captured. And when it's been captured, you can't do it. And I'm going to tell you again, this is not pshat. But just because it's not pshat doesn't mean that it's not beautiful. And he continues and he says, Ve'veitel toch betcha v'gilchat rosha Yetzer Hara shehu rosha. Rotzalom v'shava kodim yigaleich klomar yatish kocho kimosha amar shimshon. So he says, you have to now subdue the Yetzer Hara, so you take it and cut off its hair. It loses its power. And he brought us, again, wonderful associative thinking, and if you want, you can almost say a literary analysis of this based upon Shimshon. Cutting off the hair is the way you weaken the Yetzer Hara. The fingers, and he makes this whole analysis with Adam Arishon, and was originally made out of, this Gemara was made out of this fingernail type, and then he sinned and he lost this luster, this glow about him, which is sort of like the fingernails. And he goes on to say that, you know, you need to search like with the candles. And it's really interesting because he took this to a different place, but I want to continue with him. And then the Chumash said, have relations with her. Lo yitgaber od alecha el adraba shelecha leisha. So what needs to happen? She needs to become your wife. Kemo ha'isha she ezer leba'ala. She needs to become the ezer kenegdo. So I just have to stop here for a second. Who in the world ever would have thought that I could have pulled Eshiva Toar to have a Dvar Torah for Sheva Brachas? I mean, there's something wrong about all of this. But he just now said, and I'm going to go back to the Psukim, but before I go any further, I have to stop a second. Some of us may be familiar with the arguments that take place in terms of the Rishonim, and in terms of actually the Gemara, and actually Amorayim, there is this question, and maybe we'll have time to look at some of it inside, but here's the question. I don't know what you imagined. You go to war, you see this woman, and you take her. And I kept using the word rape along the way. Was there a rape over here or not? Which means, was he intimate with this woman in the battlefield? So, right, was there an act of violence over here? Did that take place? Now, I kept reading into it. Now, one of the reasons I keep reading into it is because there are those who make that statement. So along the way, we're going to find out that this is a huge argument. There's an argument between the Rambam, between Rashi, between Rabbeinu Tam and the Ramban. And you can start looking at all the Rishonim to start figuring, hold on, what exactly happened in this case? And I'm going to stop looking at all of the opinions because I want to do something really simple. And that is actually want to read what the Chumash says. I want to read the words. I want to understand what the case is. And then we're going to come back and read this and then the Rambam. And we're actually going to read an unbelievable statement from Rabbi Soloveitchik also, which no one knows it. We're about to reveal it to the world because it's in the most obscure place imaginable. So we still have a couple of minutes left over here. Let's go back and read the words of the Parsha again. And here I'm going to do it now, I told you. Absolutely, I am agenda-driven. This is not apologetics. You know how I know that? Because I'm about to tell you pshat. And if it's pshat, then it's not apologetics. So let's take a look. So we'll remember that we're over here on page 6, and we're going to go all the way back to the beginning, and we're going to read it one more time. Right? And you're going to go to war. And you're going to be victorious. And you're going to have captives. For Ita Bishavya among the captives, you're going to see Neshifatar, a beautiful person. V'chashakta, but you want her. V'lakachta l'chala isha. Now that phrase, V'lakachta l'chala isha, is exactly what Rav Mordechai Cohen was going on. V'lakachta l'chala isha. You take her as a wife. Now what was his point? What's a wife? A wife is an ezer kenegdo. What's a wife? A wife is something which is romantic. What is a wife? A wife is something where you have a partnership. Now, you have to stop here because what I'm saying now to some of you is absolutely absurd. Because you have over here a complete, you have a situation where there is no equality. You have the captive and the captor. You have the individual who is powerful, actually, but not in terms of his Yetzer Hara, but he's captured this woman, and there's no equality here. How could there be a marriage? Well, what did the Chumash say? Oh, you wanted her because of her beauty. Get rid of the beauty. If you're going to go on a date, and all that you care about is what she looks on the outside, there's something the man. Okay, we need to help you over here. Let's take away all of the beauty. Let's get rid of all the enticing things. And only afterwards. Now, there are those who argue with what I just now read, because they're going to... Rabbeinu Tam said, hold it. What concession is there to the Yetzer Hara if we're going to go through this whole process? By the way, according to the Rambam, as we're about to see, anybody know how much time takes place before the marriage can actually be consummated? I know you'll tell me a month. According to the Rambam, 3 months have to go by. That's a long, cold shower. 3 months. It says you take her home, you wait, right? V'achar kein, and then tavo elo v'al tavayta lecha l'isha, and she will become your wife. But if you don't, v'ayam lo chavtstaba, but if you don't want her to be your wife, let her go. V'shalchad l'nafsha. V'machar lo tukern, because you don't own her. Do not sell her, but lo titar merba, and you absolutely have no ability to lord over her, or whatever the word titamer actually means over here in this case. Tachat asher inita, because you have done violence to her. And again, the question is, what is the violence? Some can easily say the violence is the rape, but I'm just saying it happens not to be here. And let's now go back and read that source again, exactly where we're up to, because he was talking about something which actually, I apologize for saying this, it almost sounded like it was, I'm totally afraid to say this about, like it was romantic. Again, Kaf Aleph Yud Gimel. Okay, those who don't remember, we're reading the Sifte Kohen, not to be confused with the Shach. V'achar kein tavo elea lo yitgaber od alecha el adiraba she'el lecha le'isha. You can't rule over her. You can't be powerful over her. Now she is your wife. Kmo isha shehi ezer labala, like an ezer kenegdo. Ken yelecha la'ona ha'mora b'torah, v'yelecha l'taneg u'lechol l'shtot l'neg shabbatot v'yem tovim u'lesudot mitzvah v'lo yazik lecha. And you're going to spend the holidays with her. You're going to spend Shabbat with her. V'yayim lo chavatzteba, and we're going to skip some of this. He actually draws a parallel to the case of the person whose Yetzirah is too strong for them, where it's his dress in black and so on, another case of a possible concession to the Yetzirah. Lo titamer ba, kitargumo, lo titager, don't do business. Lo tubash talit ala inayim, vitfilin gdolim shetehe nirash atachasid bikadosh. Don't dress up as if you're a holy person. And you're going to bow down by modim so severely until your head is between your knees, like a very poor person makes believe that he's wealthy. Don't make believe you're something that you're not. The person who makes believe that they're a holy person, so people should believe them, so people will trust you with their possessions, and do business. He quotes, and so on. I'm going to, without explaining that much, I want to go a little bit further. Now, after having done all of that, he finally says, now let me tell you Pshat. Amar v'nanu Hashem lekech biyadcha. The God puts this victor, you become a victor, you've conquered the other side. Ki isha chad lo te kafui tova. And your attitude towards God at this moment should not be one where you're ungrateful. Uvitova shasiti imach tivot. And not express to God properly that you were victorious. So let's hold on for a second. A religious man goes to war. And he's victorious, and he comes back to war, from war, comes back from battle. What should be the attitude? The attitude should be, thank God I survived. It should be one of bringing a korban todah. It should be one of benching gomel. It should be one of I was fortunate to be here. Ki im hayita toreach menucham b'malchama lo yita holecha chareznut. Right? Ki mishehu b'malchama. Somebody goes off to battle, libo bal imoshen yodeim yarogo yareg. Somebody at battle should be scared from very existence. They're going to live or die. Ve'enel bali de kishui ve'lo lidei znut. Such a person should not be distracted, impacted by sexual stimulation and going and chasing after this type of impropriety. Ata lo terachta ve'lo lumchanta ve'lo... You obviously didn't go to war properly. If this is all that you, this is your whole takeaway, is that you see this woman instead of having a real sense of thanking God for what happened. Not only is it wrong, and again, he's assuming something's already happened. You're taking this woman. Now, notice what he writes below Rishut. He over here is calling out and saying that there is a moral problem with just now with what is just now taking place. Why? Ki lo amar kach ota ela v'lakachta, which is a situation of marriage. Ki ilu mitareim alav shelakachta below rishut. Ho v'chein v'aveita el toch beitcha v'aitcha lecha le'isha. Lo amar v'aitcha lecha isha, ela le'isha. Which means, what is going to be over here? Is this going to be a marriage, or is this going to be a situation of power? So I want to explain a little bit more. Had the Torah not given away a path for this, then it certainly would have been one of impropriety. Now, once the Torah has allowed it, lo yitgarebo. He's not going to be, meaning, again, this is what's going to calm him down. People love things they're not allowed to do. Umam tiko be'enav, which is sweeter. Shenemar mayim genuvim yimtaku. That forbidden waters are sweet. So what exactly did he say? Forbidden waters are sweet. Stolen waters are sweet. But now it's no longer stolen. So if it's no longer stolen, there should no longer be a yetzahara. Why? Because now she's your wife. Meaning, it's one thing that you're interested in the cheerleader, but she's not the cheerleader anymore. How do we get you not to be lusting after a cheerleader, turn her into your wife? Now, I know maybe that did not sound so good to some of you, but what he's saying is that part of the attraction over here is the fact that it's not allowed. But he's saying, okay, so now it's allowed. But she has to become your wife. And now I'm not stressing this enough, so that's why I want to finally move towards the Rambam. The Rambam does something interesting. First of all, he introduces this in the laws of Melachim. And the laws of Melachim, it's actually Melachim and it's laws of kings and wars. But what he's going to do in this chapter is he's going to go on a whole side discussion where he's going to deal with, which, how should we put this, with conversion. So let's try to read it a little quickly. And here he starts off by telling us something that we learned a couple of weeks ago, that when you go out to war and you're in the enemy's territory and you don't have food, remember we learned that. You can eat all kinds of things. Why? In the case, you don't have what to eat. Okay. Halacha bed. He goes, also, the person's allowed, and now according to the Rambam, he understands as well that there could be relations out on the field. But we're going to have to understand this, Rambam. You're allowed to have relations with her, but you can't leave her. Which means what the Rambam is saying over here is that if you go out to war, you're allowed to have relations with her, but if you do this, be very careful, because a process is about to begin. Now, I'm going to try to fully explain this process, because that, I think, is going to help us understand the moral issues involved over here. Rabbi Soloveitchik, at the very end of this book called Halachic Mind, writes that true Jewish philosophy emerges out of understanding halacha. So I want to understand this halacha properly, and then we can understand the philosophy and perhaps even the morality behind it. Yes, we all understand when people go out to war, there are all kinds of atrocities that take place in war. The Rambam just now told us that you are allowed to eat non-kosher food, you're allowed to drink non-kosher wine, you're allowed to eat pig, you also have relations with this woman, but if you do, then you're obligated to do something. You can't just leave her on the road, you can't leave her on the street, you can't leave her behind. You just now created a relationship. If you have relations with her, a relationship began. And now what are you obligated to do? Ela machnisa l'toch beito. Bring her home. And you're not allowed to have the second, again, process began. You can't have relations with again until you're married. And we'll skip a little bit over here. Right. Halacha hey. She's not Jewish. If she, notice this, she has to decide if she wants to accept and become a convert, then she is immediately converted. Which means the Rambam is saying over here is that she actually holds the cards. She decides, she determines whether she will become Jewish or not, and she therefore determines whether she will become his wife or not. Why? Because he started a process. What was the beginning of the process? He decided he wanted to have relations with her. Well, I don't know if you know this. In Jewish law, you're not supposed to have relations with somebody unless you're going to marry them, or unless you're married to them. Now, over here, this is exactly where the cusp of where we're standing and what the issue is. She has to become his wife. I don't want to use the word retroactively, even though there is a retroactive issue that we're going to see in a moment. If she didn't immediately decide that she wants to become Jewish, then you wait for 30 days. And so on and so forth. And he should see her and whatever. And part of this over here, the Ram writes, is that he should not want this. This is not a wonderful idea, but I'm going to say it again. But a process began. And she's the one who controls it. In Kibla Varatzaba, Harezo Migayerit Vatovel Kholagerim. Again, she had one situation at the very beginning to convert, and now she has a second one after the 30 days. Utzrich Lam Tim Shloshachodashim, and that's what the Rambam says, she has to wait 3 months. Chodesho Bechia Ushne Chodeshim Acharav, Vinosa Biktuva Uvikidushin, and she gets the full rights as a wife. Imlocha Fetzba Mishalcha Lenafsha. And if he doesn't want her, then he can send her. Ve'im machra, but if he sold her, over belotase, then you broke the laws of the Torah. Why? Because it says, u'machar lotim karen b'kesef. Einu mechura machzir adamim. Ve'im kavsha achar shenivala l'shem shivcha, if you then try to turn her into a servant, Mi sheyishtamesh ba over obalota say shemer lo titamer ba. Shelo yishtamesh ba, you have no right to use her. Lo ratzta lehitgayer, she doesn't want to convert. Megagalim ima shtemesach chodesh, you give her 12 months. Lo ratzta mekabelet shevi mitzvot shenitzvu b'nei noach u'mishalcha lenafsha. If she doesn't want to convert, and she could instead accepts on herself the seven mitzvot b'nei noach, then she becomes a regular citizen, as it were, in the land of Israel. She becomes a ger toshev. Then he can't marry because she's not Jewish. It's also interesting, it says here in Halacha Ched, if she got pregnant from that initial contact, then you convert the child. The Beitin does a conversion. Why? Because the father's Jewish, the mother isn't Jewish, which is also very interesting because that doesn't happen enough today. The Beitin doesn't want to get involved in cases like this today. But notice what the Rambam wrote over here. Okay, we're running out of time, so let's move along. The only problem with her life is going to be if she insists on remaining an idolater. Then part of the problem of what we go to war for is that if we face a battle against idolaters, then we kill them. She was given an opportunity to convert to Judaism, and she's given an opportunity to renounce idolatry. And if she doesn't do any of those things and remains an idolater, so then there's a war that Judaism has against idolatry. And that I won't whitewash, because that's the reality. Over here, it continues. Right, that she becomes a ger toshav, and the Rambam continues in this chapter to say that a ger toshav keeps the seven mitzvot, they have a share in the world to come, and it's very interesting because it's in this context that he introduces all this. Now, let me pause for a second, and there's two more sources, or three, I want to see, and then we'll end for today. The Sifri, which is really quite authoritative, goes through the whole situation. At the very end, it writes, V'acha kach tvoi le'u ba'altal. Ha'im lo asaba kol ha'masim ha'ela u'ba'ale ha'reza bi'ilat znut. That if you didn't do the entire process, then that initial action was znut. V'achar kach tovoy lo uvalta. Ein lecha ba'ale mitzvah bi'ila v'ayta lecha le'isha. And then you give her all rights and privileges. So let me try that again now in the Yerushalmi. Rabbi Yochanan shalach l'rabbanin tatamin, and he sent a message to the rabbis in Bavel. Tartin milan atun amrinan. There were a couple of things that were said b'shem rav. Late inon kain, and I don't agree. Atun amrinan, you say b'shem rav yifator lehitiru ba lohitiru torah b'zman ha'milchama ela b'ila rishana bilvad. That you understood, which is really what we just saw in the Rambam, that you're allowed to be intimate out on the field. V'ani omer v'lo b'ila rishana v'lo b'ila achorana ela la'achar kol ha'ma'asim. The only way that it's allowed is after the entire process. Now, what was the difference between the Sifri and the Rishalmi? The Rishalmi tells us there's an argument, which again is an argument between the Rishon and the Ramban and the Rambam and Rashi and so on, whether there was an initial act or not. The Rambam said yes, and now we saw that Rav Yochanan said no. But the Sifri was so interesting, because the Sifri wrote, and I want to go back to this again, maybe I'll bold it. V'ha'im lo asaba et kol ha'masim ha'ele. But if not all of those things were done, uba la'reza bilad znut, then the relations that he had, I'm going past tense, was znut. Take a look at source 32. This is a little thin volume, which some of us have. It's called Chidushei Hagram V'Hagrid. This is the Chidushim of Rabbi Soloveitchik and his father, Rav Moshe Soloveitchik, on the Rambam, on that halach we just now read. Humishum da Rambam sover da Chidushim v'arbiya ha-mevo'arim b'parsha sham yachanim kol adinim gam heim medine kiyum yifat Torah re kol adinim shel ha-parsha heim le'ikuva. Every single thing that needs to be done, the cutting of the hair and the nails and so on, all of this is li'ikuva, kidmuvar b'sifri. And he brought the sifri I just now showed. Ala posuk achrin tavo leh, ha'im lo asaba et kol ha'masim ha'elu ba leh, ha'reza bilatznod. So what is he really saying? And there's this Pnei Yeshua and others which are similar, but I want to wrap up. What he's saying is that there's a process over here of Yifat Torah. and I'm going to continue with the Siftei Kohen that we had seen before. The process is that she becomes your wife, which means, you know what? If someone's going to become your wife or your spouse, I don't care which way it goes, that should already be something which you have in mind from the very first date. It's something which the relationship is based on the entire gambit of the relationship, which means what would happen? I just want to go backwards a second. According to the Rambam, what would happen if, and again, I want to point out this is an argument and it's much more the Pnei Yoshua that I didn't read inside. If a person gave into the Yetzer Hara and they were with this Yeshivat Torah and assumed that they were intimate along the way and then never married her along the way and she never became Jewish, retroactively, that was an action of znut. Retroactively, that was act of rape. Retroactively, that was something which was not allowed. But you're going to tell me, but it is allowed. No, it's only allowed because of what happens afterwards. It's only allowed because now you took her home as your wife. It's only allowed because she becomes the Ezer Kenegdo, which means the only difference what happened here as compared to other things is that arguably, I'm going to say that's an argument we just now saw between Rav and Rabbi Yochanan, maybe premarital relations was allowed in this case, but only somehow, if it were, because Rabbi Yochanan insists it wasn't, but if it was allowed, it was only allowed because of this relationship which is now going to take place. But if a relationship didn't take place, then you just now gave into the Yetzer Hara. And maybe it's like eating meat, which is a second before the Shechita, and maybe it's worse than that. There's a big argument whether this person who did this, if they need kapara or not. And what would the question be? Was that an act of znut or not? According to the Sifri, and the way that I understand Rabbi Soloveitchik reading the Sifri, it was an act of znut unless everything took place. What's the everything? Well, the everything was cutting the hair. The everything was cutting the nails. The everything was making her your wife. That's what I'm getting to. If that doesn't happen, then not everything took place. And what did the Sifri then say? That was an act of znut. It was an act of immorality. Which means the situation of the Fator only has one happy ending, and that happy ending is they live happily ever after together. If that doesn't take place, then everything doesn't work. And again, now I want to insist, according to Rashi, that we didn't see inside, Rashi says, what are you talking about? He's not allowed to touch her the whole time. And that's really what it sounded like the Pshat in the Chumash. There was a captive, you come over to her, what's your name? Nice to meet you. And now, by the way, there's a background. There's a background to all of this that we can't ignore. The Rambam makes sure we know it. You have to whisper in her ear, if you remain an idolater, they're going to kill you. By the way, Tosfot seems to indicate that the Geirut maybe is not a real Geirut because she's not really accepting it. She's doing it because she doesn't want to get killed. But I'm going to tell you a story. I'm going to end with the story. I'll just tell you one more thing about it. Rabbi Noach Weinberg was Rosh Yeshiva of Eishet Torah, and I was quite friendly with him. So he told me a story. I'm sure he's told many people the story, but he told me this story. He said, once upon a time, a guy came over to him, and he said, Rabbi, you think that you know how to do kiruv, you know how to make people religious? I once made, and I hope I'm not exaggerating, a 93-year-old man who was not religious his entire life, I was makar of him. And not only was I makar of him, over one weekend, I was makar of him. He goes, what happened? What do you say to him? He goes, I'll tell you the story. I own a nursing home. And I had a couple of Jewish people there, and everybody else wasn't Jewish. So all the non-Jewish people, I had a kosher kitchen, but there were so many non-Jewish people, and the kosher food was so much more expensive. So I decided to make everything not kosher. But for the Jewish people, I was going to bring them meals from outside and give them their kosher meals. So there was this one non-religious, 93-year-old Jewish man, and I wanted to bring him his special food. He refused. I want the food like everybody else, but the food for everybody else isn't kosher. He goes, I don't care. So I was about to lose, over the year, millions of dollars if I make everybody's food kosher. So he said, so what do you do? He said, I was makar of him. He goes, what did you say to him? He goes, I have no idea what I said to him. I had no choice. I was going to lose millions of dollars. So I convinced him to become Shomer Shabbos and Shomer Kashrus. He goes, how? He goes, I sat and I talked to him. I told him every story. I knew everything. He goes, and the guy became from it and then understood that he has to eat kosher food. Which means if this man who goes out to war wants to marry this woman, then he has to convince her to become a Jewish woman. He has to convince her that she has to keep kosher. He has to convince her to get rid of idolatry. Which means what the Torah is presenting here, and I'm saying especially when you go back and read the entire Rambam here, what he is suggesting over here is a process, and in order for this to be kosher, every part of the process has to take place. Again, you can accuse me of reading too much into it. From the beginning to the end, and according to the Rambam, there was a beginning. According to Rashi, there wasn't. You need to go through this entire process, bring her home, convince her about the truth of Judaism. See, if she only rejects idolatry but doesn't want to become a Jew, so the Rambam told you, so she walks away and becomes a ger toshav, shev mitzvah b'nei noach. She becomes a free person. And you can't marry her. The only way you can marry her is if you convinced her that she wants to become Jewish. How do you convince her? Well, you may not have a choice. If you really want to marry her, you got to convince her to become Jewish. How do you convince her? Go ahead, go do Kiruv. Which means over here, we were reading this as an act of violence. It's not an act of violence. And again, I'm saying this for one reason. There are three possibilities. She gets killed because she remains an idolater. It's a bad plan. Second possibility is she becomes his wife. Maybe good plan, maybe not, but she has to agree to accept gear. Or she can say, I accept Sheva Mitzvah B'nei Noach. I'm not an idolater anymore. And just by saying that, something magical happens. What is it? She's free. She doesn't have anything to do with him. She has all the rights and privileges of a free individual. She's not a slave. She's not there. And she has this other way out, which means I'm going to go back to the guy again. You want to marry her? Go convince her to become a Jewish woman. Go convince her that you want to be wife. Go serenade her. Go take her out. Go buy her dinner. Go take her, which means the whole situation just now changed, I think, dramatically. And if somehow you followed that opinion that you thought relations were allowed, okay, now, there's two possibilities. Those relations that took place already either are going to retroactively be an act of znut. Why? Because you didn't do every single detail afterwards. Or they're going to be an act of part of this relationship and this marriage that will take place. Now, whose choice is that? Well, obviously, in a relationship, there's a combination over here. I truly believe that I did not say any apologetics today. I truly believe, you can all argue with me, I truly believe that what I did over here was trying to understand the pshat. I used the Sifri, I used that Sifti Kohn, I used the Rambam, I used Rashi, and I read the words. I understand how you can read this differently, and I understand that on a moral level there's a lot to discuss over here, but what I think is that this is not exactly what maybe some of us had thought before we began. And maybe I'd be wiser not to talk about Eshivat Torah next year. Certainly not in terms of Sheva Brachos.